If you're looking for exceptional auto service, head on down to Sullivan Tire. Family owned and operated, they've been serving New England for over 60 years. Their highly trained staff will give you a hand with any of your auto needs. Sullivan Tire offers brand name tires and parts at a price that can't be beat. They're always here to get you there. Sullivan Tire. Welcome back to the My Hockey Life podcast. My name is Brandon Hall, joined by Jake Levin. As always, Jake, welcome aboard.
Brandon, I am already having severe hockey withdrawal.
State Championship Sunday has gone and passed us just a few days ago, and of course,
you sure? I think that BC Paul Francis game is still going.
It might have still gone. You know, I was texting back and forth with Danny Ventura from the Herald, and you know, we had a. When is the Duxbury game going to start? And my best guess was Wednesday. So here we are on Wednesday recording just after the Duxbury game finished. Six really action-packed games on St. Patrick's Day at the Garden. Multiple overtime games. Multiple games that went to multiple overtimes. The crew at the Garden, I can't imagine what they were up against. The final game, Duxbury and Winchester, didn't start until, 2 hours after.
It was 2 hours, 13 minutes. Supposed to start at 7:45, puck dropped 9:58.
So that in and of itself marks what I'm sure is the latest start game for any game this year.
I was going to say, right, because most of these games, you know, you'll have the occasional 8:30 game on a Saturday night.
Right.
Very rare.
Yeah, so there's actually a rule.
An hour and a half later than the latest.
Yeah, there's actually a rule in the code in the blue book that says that the games during the week can't start after 8 o'clock, and games during the weekend can't start after 8:30. So that would be a violation by the MIAA on the MIAA. So unintentional, no doubt. But we'll get to the juicy parts there as we go along. But we'll start with Division II girls. It was Wellesley, the number 5 ranked team, and Notre Dame Academy of Hingham, which was the number 7 ranked team. Wellesley's road to the finals was a first round bye, a 5-0 win over Canton, a 6-1 win over Norwell, a 4-1 win over Walpole in the semis. And then Notre Dame had a first round bye, a 3-2 win over Dedham, a 4-0 win over Falmouth, and a 3-0 win over Westwood in the semis. The final there was Wellesley 3, Notre Dame Academy of Hingham 2, and that was an overtime game.
What's so impressive about each of those programs is that the faces have changed in terms of who the head coach is, and the results are pretty much the same. You know, the great George Campbell out at Wellesley, he steps down after many years of great service. In comes P.T. Donato, boom. Back-to-back state titles. Jean-Yves Waugh steps down at Notre Dame of Hingham. In comes John Findlay. Boom, another championship game appearance at the very least. It's a testament to the players who've stuck around those programs. And I know Wellesley, as the public school, has tended to, I think, keep more of their players at Wellesley throughout 4 years. As far as I know, there were several seniors on this Wellesley team and a few on NDA who were each there for their previous championship meeting in 2016. So Wellesley, they were on, I don't want to call it a Buffalo Bills-like run, but they got to the final every year, 3 years in a row, and lost. But then, boom, they've won back-to-back 2 in a row now. So they've been to 5 out of 6 finals, won the last 2. They're probably the most consistent program in all of girls hockey right now. And if you're not the Bills, I guess you're the Patriots when you win back-to-back and you're in the final every other year, and you might not win every year, but you're always there. So I guess they're the Patriots.
It really is impressive to see some of these teams back year in and year out. And you know, that they're able to sustain that kind of success. You know, Notre Dame Academy of Hingham is clearly the best all girls school on the South Shore. So they're able to draw from that area. But you know, you look at Wellesley as a public school, it's a little different. You know, you've got to have a great youth hockey feeder system. You know, you've got a nice facility there at Babson that they're able to play out of.
Most underrated rink in the state.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you too. And as far as crowds go, like it's a smaller building, so you feel like you're on top of the crowd. And then for us in the press box, the crowd feels like it's on top of the players on the ice surface. The press box is actually on top of the ice surface.
It's
you're looking out.
It's an incredible facility all the way around, and I get that it's privately owned, but it's centrally located. And you know, if the MIA is looking to avoid these, big games at mausoleums up at the Songus Center, which is a beautiful, beautiful venue. Don't get me wrong, but if you're looking for something a little more centrally located, I think Babson might have something there.
Yeah, it's a pretty good spot, and it's pretty centrally located, like you said. Of course, I still have my love affair with Warrior Arena, but that's another time for another day. In the Division I girls final, we had Austin Prep against Methuen-Tewksbury. Austin Prep came in as the number one seed, an unbeaten team. One of the two teams that was in the state championships playing for an undefeated season or unbeaten season. Against number three, Methuen-Tewksbury. Methuen-Tewksbury's road to the championship was a first-round bye, a 6-2 win over Westford Academy, a 7-1 win over Peabody Linfield North Reading, and a 9-1 win over Longmeadow in the semis. Meanwhile, Austin Prep, their road to the final was a first-round bye, a 5-0 win over Hingham, a 5-3 win over Braintree, a 3-2 win over Andover in the semis. And then Austin Prep and Methuen-Tewksbury played on Sunday. Methuen-Tewksbury takes the game 2-1. Into overtimes.
Is that game had probably the best save of the entire day. Kaya, I believe I'm pronouncing that right. Kaya, perhaps. Hollingsworth, the goalie for Tewksbury Methuen. Lenny Rowe of the Boston Globe and WATD. He got a video of it. He was down there in the corner.
By the way, I was following all these games on Twitter because I was away. He had probably the best view of all of the best action of all of the games. Lenny had somehow stuck out that, I want to refer to it as the, I think it's Ray Stanfield, the guy that took the photo of Bobby Orr flying through the air. He had like the Ray Stanfield shot of all of this great stuff. It's absolutely incredible. So credit to Lenny Rowe.
Lenny's good at what he does, but so it's either between Hollingsworth or there was another save that we'll get to later on in the BC High Pole Francis game. I think the one Chase Congdon made in the fourth overtime was also
pretty
impressive. But yeah, either one of them, Hollingsworth and Congdon, those would be the saves of the day, if you will. Tewksbury Methuen, they're the first co-op program in girls hockey to win a state title, and I think that's good. I think that's a good thing that these co-ops are working. They're keeping girls at, Massachusetts high schools rather than going off to play for a club team somewhere. And if it takes two towns to come together to form a competitive team, then that's great. Sarah Otteri, the coach at Tewksbury Methuen, wrapping up what I believe is her fourth season. She has 7 losses. Jeez. In those two seasons.
Wow.
4 seasons, rather. But it just remarkable. And then Stephanie Wood over at Austin Prep, they have the title in 2016. Great season last year, and then get all the way to the Garden without a loss this year. So a pretty impressive run by both of those schools. And two programs I think we could see at the Garden next year and years to come.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. And just a correction, it was Ray Lucier who took that photo of Bobby Orr. I was thinking of Fred Stanfield and Ray Lucier. Fred Stanfield was also on the ice during that game-winning goal by Bobby Orr. But aside from that, the Division I girls, to think that Austin Prep almost made it the entire way as an undefeated team or unbeaten team is remarkable.
It's hard to do.
Yeah, right. And you look at what Canton was able to accomplish, and we'll talk about them in a minute.
Sure. I mean, Hanover, last year, the Hanover boys, they could not have been firing on all cylinders any better than they were coming into the Garden last year. They were outscoring their opponents. I want to say it was 28-1 by the time they got to the Garden. And I know Austin Prep, they had only played 3 games leading into their run, so the differential wasn't quite as impressive. But it's hard to do. There's a reason that Canton, as we're going to get to later, was the first team, at least on the boys' side, to go unbeaten in 20 years, 21 years, since Brian Schumann. And this is cool. Jim Clark pointed this out.
Yeah, it is really cool, yeah.
Schumann was a player on the CM team that went unbeaten, and now he coaches the Canton team.
Right, right. And you know, that was one of a couple of neat instances of things that happened. You know, you got John Blake, who wins a state championship with Duxbury, and had won one as a player in Canton, correct? There was a connection. There was something there, I remember, with John Blake.
Because I know Canton only had the one state title in 2010. That was the Kevin Rooney team.
Okay, perhaps.
I know they went to the title championship game, at least the Eastern Mass, a few other times. I'm sure Blakey could fill us in on that.
He was involved, and congrats to him. Just recently announced
he
was the Boston Globe Coach of the Year, too, which is great.
That so he was.
Congrats
yeah.
to John. So we'll go to Division III boys now. We have Wachusett out of the West versus, or Central, I should say, versus Hopkinton, which was the number 11 seed in their bracket in the South. Wachusett's road to the finals, a first-round bye, a 3-1 win over Auburn, a 3-2 win over Groton Dunstable, a 4-3 shootout win over Longmeadow. And then we have Hopkinton, a first-round bye, a 4-0 win over Bishop Stang, a 3-0 win over North Quincy, a 7-0 win over Coyle, a 6-2 win over Ashland, and an 8-3 win over Lowell. Stop me if you've heard me say this before, but Division III South is ridiculous.
Yeah, Hopkinton was an 11 seed, double-digit seed, I think, with power seeding that would have been higher, but not a ton higher. I do think they were a little bit under the radar coming into this tournament the season long, and everything clicked at the right time. And Chris McPherson, their coach, this is a credit to him for moving arguably their most talented player in Steve Simels back to the blue line about 95% through his high school career. He moved Simos, who's also going to be a Boston Globe All-Scholastic, to defense after playing forward with two games left in the regular season, and then he stayed there throughout their postseason run, had well over a point per game. I did have an assist at the Garden. To be able to make that magic touch like that as a coach, and to have the onions to do that, I suppose, too, very impressive, and a great job by McPherson and Simos. Such a pleasure to watch. So that's what was cool about Hopkinton. And, you know, I also noticed you said that Hopkinton played five games before the Garden. Wachusett only played three. Hey, it's a broken system, but that takes nothing away from Wachusett.
Right.
They were outstanding on Sunday. Eric Skagerland, I'm drawing a blank on the first name, Skagerland for Wachusett. He was awesome, as was Grant Gardula. So, hey, if that's a system, play it. And they were awesome, very well-deserving. That is 3 years in a row now. The Central has won the Division III bracket back-to-back with Shrewsbury, which recently moved up to Division I, and Wachusett, which I believe has about 1,500 kids, maybe a little more at their school.
I think I saw somewhere that they had 900.
Many D1 programs in Eastern Mass, but again, another story for another time.
Did I see that they had 900 boys in their school?
Well, you know, it wouldn't be the first time my math has been off, so you got to figure it's about the same with girls. So, you know, 1,800.
It is a regional school, so there is that.
Right.
So there
and
is
I,
that.
And
but
I know that towns in Central Mass are not as large as they, by and large, not as big as they are in the East. And so, three towns, you know, student population wise, can equal one town, give or take, in Eastern Mass. And again, I already feel bad we're taking away from what Wachusett accomplished, and that's another story for another time, just the broken system where you have six teams in the Division III Central bracket, four in the Division III West, and then I think it was 21 in D3 South this year.
Yeah.
It fluctuates anywhere between about 18 and I've seen 25, 26 teams in D3 South since I've been involved here. So, you know, it's something that has to be addressed, and frankly, I can't believe it hasn't. But until then, Wachusett won the championship, and they deserved it.
Yeah, congratulations to Wachusett. And you know, one of the things that is similar across the board here, with the exception of the Super 8, obviously, because that's a different animal, and Duxbury having to play the Super 8 play-in game, all of these teams received a first-round bye. So they didn't have to play in a preliminary game. There was no preliminary game for them. They didn't have to, you know, play a lower seeded team to try and, you know, get it. Basically the you know, like what we're seeing right now at the NCAA tournament, right? You've got the first four in. So I think there's something to be said about that.
Do those, if you lose the first four game, do you drop down to the NIT bracket?
I think that you should. It seems fair. I actually don't even know the answer to that question, and I'm sure.
No, you don't.
Okay.
I'm just being, okay. wise.
Yeah, my extent of my NCAA basketball tournament knowledge basically starts the Wednesday before the tournament starts, where I feverishly fill out a bracket that is certainly going to lose. I'd be better suited to just throw $10 in the trash can once a year.
I hear you. Well, you know, it's tough without URI in it this year. I was so spoiled each of the last two, and now I'm fiending for basketball to watch so bad. I'm heading down to the Brown CBI game later tonight. They're playing against Alabama Birmingham. Just need something to watch. And I watch two basketball games all year because I watch so many great high school hockey games instead. So my bracket is going to be abysmal.
Yeah, my George Washington Colonials are not exactly getting it done this year after taking a deep run in the NIT a few years ago. So let's take a look at D2 boys with a perfect, near perfect season by Canton. 1 point spoiled by Boston Latin in what was, I think, the second to last game of the season. But they played Tewksbury. Tewksbury had a first round bye, a 2-1 overtime win over Linfield, a 2-1 double overtime win over Lincoln Sudbury, a 4-1 win over Danvers, and a 6-4 win over Boston Latin. Tewksbury to get to the Garden. Tewksbury had maybe the toughest of all of these teams, not including the Super 8 group. I think Tewksbury had the most difficult road to a championship game.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, Lincoln Sudbury and Boston Latin, they were as good as a lot of Division I teams this year. Frank Linzo and Joel Bova at Boston Latin. Those are, you know,
Linzo was incredible. He and his sister are both Global Scholastics this year.
I know. How cool is that?
Incredible. So then we've got Canton that hit a first-round bye, a 6-0 win over Medway, a 2-0 win over Oliver Ames, a 6-1 win over Norwood, and an 8-0 win over Westwood to get in. Pretty impressive three shutouts in the tournament, and then only one goal given up in four games in the tournament, leading up to the championship where Canton defeated Tewksbury 6-2. So much credit goes to Canton's defense and goaltending, giving up three lonely goals throughout their entire tournament run, which just goes to show how dominant they were as a 25-win team this season.
Michael Staffieri, 12 shutouts. He played in 24 of their games. So if you flipped a coin, you'd have the same odds of landing on heads as you would the odds of Michael Staffieri having a shutout. Not bad.
Wow.
Not bad stuff right there.
Wow.
I was kind of hoping Canton would have the shutout in the championship game because I no longer work for the Norwood Record, but I was hoping to throw a little bone to my Norwood peeps. Chris Martin was the only player to score on Canton in the Division II South tournament. Martin is senior captain for the Mustangs. And then, you know, Tewksbury gets a couple goals in the final, which was nice for them, obviously. But it's still just insane. And we did this a few weeks ago, but here's why Canton won not only the Division II title game, they won the Super 8, and they won Division 1, and they won Division 3. Do you want to know how?
How's that?
All right, so Canton beat Hanover, which beat Duxbury. So there's your Division 1 state championship. Duxbury beat Martin.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh. I don't mean to laugh, but I love when you do this. This is my favorite.
Just wait here.
We call this segment Jake's Rabbit Hole. Go.
Okay. So from the top, Canton beat Hanover, which beat Duxbury, which beat Marshfield, which beat Xaverian, which beat Hingham, which beat Framingham, which beat BC High. There you go. Canton Super 8 champions, as well as Division 1 along the way.
I think they have a championship belt for something like that. They don't give the little Massachusetts trophy. It's a belt.
And for Division 3, it's a little easier. Canton beat Shrewsbury, which beat Wachusett. So there you go. Canton swept the boys' titles.
It's like the Kevin Bacon game, only with hockey. I do want to make mention, too, of Ryan Nolte. Just unbelievable, the season that he had. 32 goals, 39 assists, 71 points, highest scorer in the state this year on a team full of kids that, you know, that had a ton of points. Not to mention the fact that John Hagan had 21 goals and 31 assists for 52 points as a junior and is ninth on the state scoring list while his teammate is first. You could make an argument for Nolte. I hope I'm saying this right. I apologize.
It's Nolte. Yep.
Okay. That if, you know, Ryan Nolte should be maybe the player of the year in Massachusetts, given what his team did and what he did. An And it was kind of an under-the-radar 71 points, if you could have such a thing.
Well, all you need to know about Canton is that their second-leading scorer had 52 points. That's really all you need to know about Canton. I do know at the Boston Globe, for example, we don't do a player of the year, but we do a super team, and I think you'll be seeing some Canton representation on set team. That's all I'll say about that.
Yeah, and that doesn't surprise me even in the least bit that they just had such a dominant, a historic team this year. You know, I used to say a lot of times if you have a line with 100 points on it, you're looking at a deep tournament run. Just to kind of run down some of the scoring from Canton, the defenseman with 25 points, Jack Connolly. Of course, we talked about John Hagen and Ryan Nolte. And then you've got Chris Lavoy, who's a junior, who had 27 points. Timmy Kelleher, another junior, with 22 points. Quite a few forwards with more than a dozen points. They're in good shape going forward. And I mean, you're losing a generational player in Nolte, but you've got Hagen, who had 52 points and can slide right in.
You're losing Nolte and Staffieri, and you know, I'm sure Brian Schumann would be the first to admit, impossible to replace players like that, but they are very well positioned for next year. And you know, you don't want to make predictions and say 26-0 is possible, but I could see another scenario where they're at the TD Garden pretty easily.
Yeah, and it's not like they play in a comfortable league either, where they're just playing cupcakes.
No, of course not. They'll play Franklin twice.
Yep.
I know Newburyport is generally on their schedule for a non-league game. Played a team like Natick, which was a bit down this year, but that's cyclical, and Natick can be a 12, 13, 14 Division I Bay State Conference team on any given season. You got some other teams that had some pretty good years in the Hawk, North Attleboro, Mansfield, certainly come to mind. So Canton, you know, I'm very interested to see what the rest of their non-league schedule will look like next year. I don't think it's fair to expect them to be Super 8 material again next year, but I do wonder if they'll go play, you know, I don't want to put a school on notice. I don't want to say, oh, school A would be perfect to go play Canton, but take a look at the teams in the Division I South bracket. And that's the kind of team, without getting into specifics, I'd like to see Canton play. Not one specific team, just any of those teams. It could be North for that matter as well.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there at all on any of that. Those are all good points. So let's take a look at Division I boys game, which started about 15 minutes ago. the number 3 team, Winchester, versus the number 1 team in the South. That was the Duxbury Dragons. Winchester with a first-round bye, a 3-2 shootout win over Bishop Fenwick, a 4-2 win over Billerica, and a 4-1 win over St. John's Prep gets them to the final. Meanwhile, Duxbury is one of the few teams that lost the game and then continued on to play and won a state championship, one of two this year anyway. So Duxbury lost the Super 8 play-in game, then got a first-round bye, then had a 2-0 win over Wellesley, a 3-2 double overtime win versus Barnstable, which some would say was kind of an instant classic in and of itself, and then 3-0 win over Franklin to get to the Garden with a 3-1 win over Winchester. I think their first state title since 2007.
That is correct. Third for John Blake. So he won there in 05 and 07, a little dynasty. And then this year as well, 2019. They also won in 2000. That predates Blake. But, I mean, Duxbury, they're almost under the radar because they're so good in other sports, whether that's football or lacrosse, but their hockey is right there in terms of model programs, I think, in Eastern Massachusetts, really the whole state. Certainly as far as publics go, they're the first team to lose a Super 8 playing game and go on to win the Division I tournament since Burlington in 2012. They were the first team to even get to the Garden after losing a playing game since Braintree in 2014. They had the two-goalie rotation for most of the season between Nate Romanelli and Steve Pisani. And I think the plan all along was to kind of just see who developed the hot hand at the right time. And, you know, Steve Pisani, with the number of shutouts he had in the postseason, I think John Blake played it to perfection. And Duxbury, talk about a team that's set up for next year. They only have 5 seniors.
Wow.
Yeah, and Pisani ain't one of them. He's a junior. So, and, you know, and again, they're right,
and you can say the same
Zach
about
Venarelli, for example.
Yeah, and Zach Stewart and Frenweiler. I mean, Frenweiler had a hat trick in the final, and he's coming back next year.
Yeah, they'll at Duxbury, they might. At some point, I want to sit down and do my way too early top 20 for next year. And it's impossible to know who's going to, you know, transfer and leave to do this, that, and the other. But I don't see how Duxbury's not in my top five.
Yeah, they've been good for a long time. They you know, they're, I think, 8-time straight Patriot League champions right now.
Sounds right, yeah.
You know, and they've got some challenge in the Patriot League too, you know, on the other side, you know, from Hanover, from being, you know, the overall outright Patriot League champions. But it's quite the program they've got there going right now, and you know, they can continue with, like you said, they've got you know, a bunch of juniors and a bunch of sophomores on that team that can finish. So we'll see what happens. I mean, that's why we play the games. But we move on to what was by far the most exciting game of this of the day, of very exciting games. Number 2 Pope Francis in the Super 8 final. Number 2 Pope Francis versus number 1 BC High. Pope Francis got there via a 6-2 win over Xaverian, a 5-2 win over Hingham, and a 3-2 win over BC High. BC High gets there on a 4-2 win over Marshfield, a 5-3 win over Arlington, a 3-2 loss to Pope Francis, which puts them in the one-loss bracket. And then they had a 7-4 win over Xaverian, which knocked Xaverian out and sent BC High back to the final. For the second straight year, we have a BC High versus Pope Francis final. BC High wins 2-1 on a Declan Lachlan goal in the fourth overtime, a 2-1 final for the first time ever. A game this long, 81 minutes, I believe, was the...
87 minutes.
87 minutes, okay.
22 seconds.
And the longest...
championship game.
Longest championship game in high school hockey history, to our knowledge, Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts, yeah. Yeah, I'll say this. I'm glad that somebody scored in that fourth overtime, because it sure sounds like they were going to be named co-champions if there hadn't been a winner after the fourth OT.
Yeah, and I don't really know how to do that the right way. You know, obviously, after four OTs and 87 minutes of hockey, 4-on-4 for a lot of it, you start thinking about player safety. You know, they're obviously thinking about player safety in the third.
Of course,
you know,
right? Absolutely.
And that's what it comes down to. After the third overtime, it's not about, you know, like, oh, we've got this other game waiting to get started. Like, sure, the other teams are thinking about that. But, you know, everybody else in the building is like, let's get a winner. Let's get a champion. Let's crown somebody for real here. And then, you know, do we go the Major League Baseball All-Star Game route where, you know, you know, the commissioner, Bud Selig, just throws his hands up and goes, I guess we got a tie. You know, I don't think anybody wanted to see that. But at the same time, we're talking about kids that, you know, are going to start cramping up if they haven't already, are going to get hurt if they haven't already.
Which is why there should have been a plan in place, a concrete plan in place for a shootout at the conclusion of the fourth overtime, even after three overtimes. I don't see why not start a 15-minute overtime, 5-on-5, a 15-minute overtime, 4-on-4, 15 minutes, 3-on-3, and then if still nobody scored, shootout.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right way to do it, because then you're pulling guys off the ice and it opens the game up, and you're going to have – someone's going to make a mistake and they're going to score, and it's going to be on a hockey play as opposed to the shootout, which is, you know, we have our issues with the shootout. You know, look.
Oh yeah, go back.
I go back a couple of years ago where Oliver Ames is in a 16-round shootout, and you know, Jimmy Tierney makes 15 saves in a 16-round shootout, and they lose. And you know, I don't know how you end your season like that, but anyway, I think that you're trying to crown a state champion, you should have a state champion. I'm glad things ended the way that they did. BC High had an incredible game. Chase Congdon was outstanding in net, not to be overshadowed at all in the least bit, was Ben Zaranek with 44 saves.
Oh, he was phenomenal. I felt so bad for those Pope Francis kids after that game. I was down there in the press room after, and they came in and answered questions, and I just so impressive. Zarek's a sophomore, so I guess he's about 16 years old, might be 15, about to turn 16.
Right, right.
The poise he showed, the head on his shoulders, he is going to be okay. I don't know what his hockey future holds beyond, you know, high school, but he, whatever he does, he's going to succeed in life because the poise and cool, calm, and collectedness he showed in that moment, and it sucks that somebody had to lose that game. It absolutely sucks, but man, was Zarenek awesome in that post game.
Yeah, I mean, you love to see good things happen in those post games where people handle the wins and the losses with class. You know, think back to last year when Mike Makach goes into the Stoneham locker room with the puck. You know, and to hear about Zarenek like that, it's great to know that not only is the sport surviving and thriving in Massachusetts, but that these young men and young women playing the game are coming out and learning life lessons and developing character. And it's the reason why our sport has a character award, the Hobie Baker Award, yep, in high school, the high school Hobie Baker. And, you know, it does me well to think that the game is in good hands. It makes me happy to think that the game is in good hands with to hear stories like that.
And Brian Foley was awesome too, the Pope Francis coach. And, you know, I didn't talk with any of the other players, but Brian Foley was awesome. Somebody asked him what he said in the locker room after the game, and he said, if I wasn't crying, I would have said something, or something along those lines. He handled it the right way, and again, sucks somebody had to lose, but what an awesome game that was.
Right. Yeah, no question about that. And with that, it wraps up a successful season in Massachusetts hockey for us here at My Hockey Live for our podcast. And we want to try something new here. We've got a My Hockey Live podcast all tournament team. These are players from Division 1, Division 2, and Division 3, all combined into one six-man squad. So I guess I'll just rattle off the names here, Jake, if you want to jump in and comment about them as I rattle them off. So
works for me.
Yeah, starting in goal, we've got Ben Zarenek from Pope Francis. Just yep, outstanding all season long, a 1.58 goals against average and a .924 save percentage.
He was outstanding. I just talked about how great he was as a person after the game. He might have been even better as a player. 45 saves in, you know, 4 overtime periods. It just... video game numbers.
Yeah,
he was
right,
awesome.
Right. We'll go from the net out, of course, like any good team is built. So we've got defenseman Jack Venturelli of Duxbury, who finished the season with 22 points.
He was a rock for the Dragons all season long. They didn't really have a superstar, I don't think, on that Duxbury team. But Venturelli was probably as close as it would get. It just rock solid. Good lacrosse player, I understand. You know, he's from Duxbury, who wasn't, but he's going to go and play at Conn College, I believe John Blake told me. So, you know, he is a multi-sport athlete.
That's great. So we've got another defenseman. It's Sean Gardner out of Wachusett, who finished the season with 32 points.
Well, you limit that Hopkinton team to only 2 goals in the final, and, you know, it starts with the goalie and the defenseman. Gardner was awesome in that game.
And then we've got 3 no-brainers as forwards from BC High, Thomas Kramer, who finishes with 38 points this season.
Kramer, you know, it's like a good college basketball season where you know you have a great player coming back for his junior, senior season. In this case, senior. You know, like, I'm going way back here. Like a J.J. Redick or an Adam Morrison. You just knew that those guys were going to be in the running for the Naismith, which is the, you know, the best player in college basketball. And you just knew from the start of the season that Thomas Kramer was the best player in high school hockey, and he lived up to that and then some throughout the season, wire to wire. What a pleasure to watch him play these last 4 years.
Absolutely. And then forward out of Xaverian, Josh Barton, who finished the season with 48 points.
Barton, phenomenal player to watch, fun player to watch, all 3 zones. He wound up over 100 points for his career. He surpassed his 100-point mark. I want to say it was their Super 8 win over Austin Prep. He got it in the postseason. I know that. And with 47 points, is that what we said, 47 points this year?
48, yeah.
48, okay. So he had basically half of his production as a senior. He's a guy who put in his work, freshman and sophomore year in particular, to become the player that he became junior and senior year is, you know, maybe the best player on probably the best Zavarian team ever. That's, you know, they've made it within one game of the Garden before in other Super 8 formats, and as well as in the Division I South tournament. But they've never won as many Super 8 games this year as they did in other years. As a matter of fact, I think, not even including the play-in game, they won more Super 8 games this year than any of their other Super 8 appearances combined. So pretty cool, pretty historic, and Josh Barden was, you know, the straw that stirred the drink for the X-Men.
And then lastly, certainly not least, we've got forward Ryan Nolte of Canton. Again, we've talked about him already on the podcast, but 71 points this season, 32 goals, 39 assists. I mean, either one of those numbers would be a career season for most players.
No brainer. A career season, it would be a career.
32 points, I should say. 32 points or 39 points in a season would be a career season for most players, or an entire career for most players. 32 goals, 39 assists, 72 points. There are NHL players who are not putting up those numbers. Those, again, like you said before, like about Zaranek, those are video game numbers, you know.
I'm not sure where Nolte is going next year. I'm not sure what his plans are after high school, but I certainly hope college is involved. I certainly hope college hockey is involved, is what I meant to
right,
say.
Right, right. I don't blame you there. All right, so that wraps up another episode of the My Hockey Life podcast. Jake, you have anything you'd like to plug here?
Yeah, actually, I took, this is what you do when it's, you're between the winter and spring seasons and there's not really anything going on with the Patriots. I've had a lot of downtime this week, and I put together a very preliminary tournament format that I think might benefit a lot of people.
I would love to hear about it. Perhaps another podcast.
We'll talk. And looks good on the Shriners game in terms of MHL broadcasting it.
Excellent. So that would be coming up on the 31st of March. I believe that's out of Canton Ice House.
That is correct.
Excellent. Excellent. I believe I know one of the coaches in that game. I think the South coach is going to be the Plymouth South staff based on their performance from last season.
I know they're
pretty excited about that.
So it's going to be a family affair.
Yeah. So we'll see about getting over there for that. That about wraps it up for me. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Coach Hall Chirps. It would also be great for our listeners if you could rate our podcast on iTunes or subscribe on iTunes. It just helps us get out there even more. And you could follow Jake on Twitter at Jake1109. Jake, a pleasure as always.
Brandon, I think this was our best podcast of the season. I picked a good time for it.
I think we did too. All right. So we will hopefully talk to you very soon in the near future, maybe how we're going to change some of Massachusetts high school hockey for the better. And with that, we leave you. Have a good one.